Sadgurnath Maharaj ki jai. Namaste and blessings. May your richness and joy increase. Welcome to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri. This Swami is an instructor and Swami in the Mahadeva Mahayoga system under the supervision of the Guru, His Holiness, Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj of Los Angeles, California, who in 2007 became the very first white-skinned American-born human being to be invited into the rank of the 80 Mahamandaleshwars who serve Sanatana Dharma on this particular planet. Sanatana Dharma means the eternal natural way, more popularly referred to as Hinduism. It's just always been here. Now, before we get into our exploration of the authoritative Guru Gita for today, kindly allow this Swami to send out Shakti blessings and much love and respect and joy to all the millions, actually tens of millions of human beings gathered in Ujjain right now for the Kumbh Mela, which is the largest gathering of humanity on this particular planet for any purpose. One of the disciples of Mahadeva Mahayoga, Sri Gyanaji, is there right now, bunking with our friends in the Juna Akara. You may remember that term from its representative, Baba Rampuri, who this Swami has had on Meditative Living before. Anyway, Sri Gyanaji is over there in Ujjain having a great time, and also kindly allowed the Swami to send out love, respect, and blessing to all the Mahadeva Mahayoga disciples, initiates, and students all over this planet. At this moment, we have representatives and people studying, doing the sadhana of Mahadeva Mahayoga on every continent on this planet. So we are very, very thankful to be of service to people around the world. Now, on to, this is Guru Gita, episode number 6, in which we explore a text entitled The Authoritative Guru Gita of H.H. Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj. That is this Swami's guru. The translation for this text was done by Acharya Padma Najendra from the Sanskrit into English. And the commentary was written by Swami Anantanandagiri, who followers of meditative living will know pretty well. Let us begin with, again, if for some reason you haven't heard episodes 1 through 5, you really should go back to number 1 and catch up. It does make a difference. Okay. Now remember that the Guru Gita is a story told by a rishi named Sutta, telling the story of Shiva's conversation with his wife Parvati. And she asks Shiva to explain the guru principle and the understanding of how the guru works and all the aspects to the guru, both the transcendental and the living, individuated guru who carries out the function of assisting others to enlightenment and potential liberation. Now, we continue from number 56. Shiva says, O Parvati, know that this body, which is full of worms, germs, foul-smelling urine and feces, etc., is transient, the abode of all sorrows. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The body is temporary. It is a vehicle that allows one to have sensory experiences of the world and to interact with it from the perspective of a limited individual. In other words, God is viewing the world through your eyes and everyone else's. Now, this is all well and good so long as one is aware of their unity with absolute consciousness while all this is taking place. When this is not the case, the individual mistakenly believes that their identity is limited to the body. While the body is an extension of the eternal, all-encompassing, capital S, self, It is only a fleeting one. It is only a very tiny manifestation of Shiva's full glory. Shiva is ever unsullied. He is everything, but remains ever untouched by anything. The body, on the other hand, is a stinking bag of parasites, meat, and waste. Now, it's nice when everything is working correctly and its wants and needs are met. However, the only guarantee that it comes with is that at some point it will stop working. It's probably not going to experience ideal conditions all the time. When a person thinks that this is all that they are, their suffering is assured. They don't want their life to end, but the only life they know is bound to be snuffed out sooner or later. It's most likely going to be a source of pain and disgust at some points in the meantime. Even when all is going well, the inevitability of the body's demise is a constant source of background anxiety until one attains the vantage point of Shiva, that is. 57. Shiva says, prostrations to the Guru who saves all those people who have climbed the tree of samsara only to fall into the ocean of hell. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The sense I am is a constant so long as there is awareness. When the I sense attaches itself to the various forms of the universe, it generally accepts the boundary of that particular form as final. This is illusion or maya. It's a beautiful theatrical composition, but when we are trapped within its confines, it often becomes a house of pain. The big S self becomes clothed in thoughts, and identifying with those thoughts and the physical body vehicle, it becomes the individual jiva or soul in the Christian understanding. The jiva is destined to don a physical body in the earth realm until such time as it is used up and worn out. At this point, the body is cast off, just as a person throws off their smelly clothes at the end of a day. In between physical in between one physical body and the next, tradition tells us karma is worked out in various heavens and hells. This is the definition of samsara, the vast diversity of the world tree. And the individuals who inhabit it is all emitted from the seed that is Shiva. Consciousness descends into the universe of the duality that is material existence. i.e. all people, climb the tree of samsara. Shiva, as Shakti, vomits forth the universal appearance of Maya. We are all destined to, quote, fall into the ocean of hell, unquote, over and over again, until, by Guru's grace, the jiva remembers its own true nature as Shiva, realizing the Guru Tattva. Stepping away from the text for a moment. Again, a tattva is an archetypal understanding or principle. Okay? Back to the text. In other words, this cycle continues until both garments, the body and the mind, are discarded, and only the I sense, which precedes both of them, remains. Number 58. Shiva states, the Guru himself is the entire triumvirate, Brahma, the creator, Vishnu, the sustainer, and Shiva, the destroyer. The Guru is the supreme Brahman. To such a Guru, I offer my prostration. Swami Anantananda's commentary. In its transcendent aspect as the Guru Tattva, the Guru is that which both transcends and fully pervades all of its diverse manifestations, including its threefold powers, which govern the universe by creating, sustaining, and eventually dissolving it. These powers of creation, sustenance, and dissolution continue to manifest in the personal, living Guru. As Shiva, the Guru dissolves the faulty notion of I as distinct from an other. Thus, the universe is destroyed at the level of the individual, or at least the subconscious assumption is destroyed, that one is only a limited portion of it, and thus subject to its dominion. In the form of the awakened human being, the vibration of the personal Guru carries out the function of Vishnu, holding the very fabric of the objective universe together, so long as it is ordained that it should continue to exist. I have seen this claim in more than one sacred text, whose names I can't recall at the moment, and I endorse it because of subtle perceptions I have had, which, by my estimation, verify its credibility. I do not have any empirical evidence in support of this claim, so take it or leave it as you see fit. Finally, the personal Guru, the living master, has access to the full creative potential of the Absolute. Thus, Brahma manifests in the creative works of the awakened human being to an extent seldom, if ever, duplicated by a partially awakened human. Adidas Samraj was a critically acclaimed visual artist, a devotee once recounted an ecstatic encounter induced by visiting an art installation that he had been responsible for. This devotee of Adida said, "And there was one occasion when we went to Cow Catcher, which was where he made this kind of a huge world inside this building of trains. It was just trains and train tracks and miniature buildings. And it was just the most incredible thing I have ever seen. And I have afterwards, the feeling was that everything was beautiful. After that, everything I looked at was just amazing, and I could not stop smiling. And everyone was just like," and he spreads his arms wide, "like this, laughing. I think even now, I can still connect to that feeling. Whenever, I mean, just thinking about it, I just feel, you know, amazing." Returning to Swami Anantananda's commentary, "Furthermore, the scriptures are full of accounts of the awakened human being who is the personal living guru, possessing certain yogic powers or siddhis, such as the ability to manifest objects, create bodies, or even entire universes. However, the beings who really are fully awake do not make big shows of these abilities on account of their humility. This is a great paradox, that one who has become the omnipotent Shiva must necessarily be free from the pride of the yogic feats seemingly carried out by the individuated, embodied aspect of themselves. However, any ardent devotee of such a guru is well acquainted with the powers that manifest in their presence. Generally speaking, however, these come unsought, and when they are acknowledged, if ever, it is only with marked disinterest." Kindly allow this Swami to add here, yes, very, very, very true. And even amongst we who are in a state such as this Swami, being representatives and points accessible by apparent others to Guru Shakti, we get to see things occur. They would qualify for the term miracle. But we know it wasn't us who did it. It happened, yes, but it happened due to Guru Shakti choosing that moment for that particular occurrence to happen for the good of whatever purpose may be served. And we walk a very fine line in the attempt to remain unattached when such things occur, because it is a great temptation to wish to claim responsibility for this, whatever it may be. All sorts of things can happen. But even within ourselves, who have taken on the Swami role and duties, we must be very, very careful about that. Number 59. We're going to do 59 through 62 without commentary yet. 59. The guru is the one who applies the ointment of knowledge, opening the eyes of those who are blinded by the cataract of ignorance. To such a guru, I offer my prostrations. This is Shiva speaking here. 60. The entire universe, with its moving and unmoving objects, is pervaded by him. I offer my prostrations to that one by whose grace this state is seen. 61. He who has seen that, with a capital T, and knows that his consciousness alone pervades the entire universe of sentient and insentient objects, of moving and unmoving things, to such a guru, I offer my prostrations. 62. The three worlds are pervaded by the light of consciousness, which is referred to as that, with a capital T. I prostrate myself before the guru who teaches, you are that. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The Mahavakya, great statement, Tat Tvam Asi, essentially means that you, yourself, are the light of consciousness. For more on this and other great sayings of the Upanishads, we will find in Shloka 111. Sonic, let's go ahead and do the bottom of the hour break song, and we will be back with number 63 on meditative living.
Namah Shivaya, 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 Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva. Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva. Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva. Om Namah Shivaya, Shiva Jiva.
Namaste and blessings. Welcome back to Meditative Living with Swami Shivananda Giri as we continue our exploration of the authoritative Guru Gita of His Holiness Mahamandaleshwar Paramahamsa Swarupananda Vishwaguru Maharaj. Number 63, Shiva says, I offer my prostrations to the Guru by following his words. Within a moment, within the twinkling of an eye, one perceives himself to be Shiva only. Swami Anantananda's commentary. By following the instructions of the living Guru, erroneous mental conditioning is destroyed. When there is nothing left to obscure the perception of self, the jiva becomes Shiva. The moment in which this occurs expands out to infinity, since Shiva, the big S, self, is beyond the sheath of time. The process of eradicating this mental conditioning may take decades, a few years, a few minutes, depending on how much of it the individual has to contend with in the first place. But the full knowledge of the self, of the universe, and of God occurs in a single flash at the precise instant that awareness becomes anchored to that which is unobscured by space and time. Now, if we take the phrase by following his words more literally, we are reminded that Shruti, that which is heard, leads to source, to the Guru, to the knowledge of self as Shiva only. Thus, when we have followed the Guru's words, in this sense, that is the moment, one that need not be any longer in duration than the twinkling of an eye, in which the self is known as Shiva only. It is in that moment that the jiva becomes Shiva, and its work here on this material plane is complete. Shiva states, prostrations to the Guru, who is of the nature of consciousness, who is beyond space, the ether element, beyond nada, bindu, and kala, the limited ability to do things, and who is peaceful and pure. Swami Anantananda's commentary. The expansion of consciousness that takes place when one is engaged in a single thought should be known as the source from whence another arises. One should experience that for oneself. Shortly after, from that expansion arises the point or bindu. From that sound, nada, from that form, rupa, and from that taste, rasa, which disturb the embodied soul. Bindu is the manifestation of light, usually between the eyebrows, potentially at other subtle nervous centers as well. This and other subtle phenomena occur spontaneously as a result of receiving the grace of a Shaktipat guru. This is a symptom of awakened kundalini, of consciousness expansion. Bindu, the point, may also be experienced by those who contemplate the earth element through the practice of breaking apart the point. Another of these subtle phenomena that may occur spontaneously as a result of grace is nada. Nada is an inner sound. It can sound like any number of musical instruments, like the buzzing of bees, like rushing water, like roaring thunder, or simply a generic sort of white noise resembling an electrical hum or a ringing sound, etc. It is also sought after by yogis. Oh, excuse me, I went to the wrong spot. Rupa refers to form. In this context, it denotes the experience of visions that appear before one's inner eye. Examples of this are visions of deities, sacred geometry, sacred symbols, sigils, etc. A common occurrence for initiates who have received the Guru Shakti. Rasa is the experience of divine taste, potentially even without having eaten anything. When I have experienced this, I was eating food. The food just happened to be more delicious than it had any business being by ordinary standards. Finally, there is a peculiar tactile sensation that is associated with the aforementioned consciousness expansion. It can also be experienced by meditating upon the air element. This is essentially the experience of prana, the subtle energy that animates the body moving upward. For me, it has generally fallen within the spectrum of pleasurable to annoying. It has been described as comparable to an ant crawling on the skin by multiple sources. I once did sadhana for some time in the state of Kentucky, where there were a lot of ticks. Every time I would meditate I would feel a sensation like that of a bug crawling on my head, and I would check to see if it was a tick. I had almost resolved to ignore the sensation and remain absorbed in meditation. After about 2 weeks worth of false alarms, when I found a tick partially burrowed into my scalp. The two sensations can be entirely indistinguishable at times. Other times, the sensation is quite pleasant. Imagine the sensation of a slight tickle that branches up and out from the spine in patterns. Moreover, there is a sense of the body part in question feeling happy or blissful, for lack of a better way of putting it. The Svetasvatara Upanishad describes some of those phenomena as follows. In deep meditation, aspirants may see forms like snow or smoke. They may feel a strong wind blowing or a wave of heat. They may see within them more and more light, fireflies, lightning, sun, or moon. These are signs that they are well on their way to Brahman. In summary, we have discussed most of the subtle elements and the inner experiences associated with them. Although this small detail isn't spelled out explicitly by Rajanaka Rama, Nada and Bindu both correspond to the ether element. If you will recall, in Shloka 64, the nature of the guru is described as being beyond the ether element, beyond Bindu, beyond Nada and Kala. Ether is the most subtle and primordial of the five elements. Thus, the guru is beyond even the most subtle and primordial of manifestations, and the corresponding subjective experience of the individual at every level. As the Svetasvatara Upanishad points out, the experience of the subtle phenomena outlined above is useful inasmuch as they are understood as signs that one is well on their way to Brahman. Shiva, from his place of all-pervading oneness, has manifested the diversity of the world and the limitation. These inner experiences are confirmation to the seeker still operating from the standpoint of the limited jiva that his self-effort and the grace of the guru are bringing him closer to the remembrance of his true nature as Shiva. At the same time, there is a potential pitfall that comes with having these experiences. They are not a point of pride. They do not indicate any achievement worth congratulating oneself over. The journey is not complete until one is permanently established in the experience that everything is Shiva only. Additionally, these phenomena can be accompanied by supernatural powers. These siddhis, spelled S-I-D-D-H-I-S, in the plural, these siddhis and phenomena present a whole new more subtle level at which the limited ego can become engorged and or new attachments can develop. Be wary and keep your eyes on the prize. Allow this Swami to add. Each and every one of these yogic powers while interesting are really just an enormous trap. If you, as the practitioner, are attempting to cause them to occur, if you are using your outwardly focused or even inwardly focused thought in order to manifest some miraculous thing or other, you're off the track. You are not forbidden to try these things. It's a very natural situation to be interested in them and to try. But this, when the individual hits this stage, when the siddhis start playing, this is one of the points where the living, embodied guru is most valuable. Allow this Swami to tell you, in all honesty, our guru has cracked this Swami on the skull with his danda. Danda is the stick or the staff that we carry. Numerous times. There was a time when this Swami was very absorbed in siddhis and took a while to come to the full realization and understanding that these are a waste and a trap. Because see, if you, being the limited you know, the body, the outwardly focused mind and thought processes, perceive this limited perspective to be the doer of these things, you're going to get yourself in trouble. And you run a tremendous risk. And it really isn't the least bit worth it. This Swami had to come to the point where the following phrase, in its fullness, had to come. This Swami would say, "Let miracles fall out of my backside while shopping for toilet paper at Walmart. I do not care what occurs." Now, when you can get to the point of that perception, that's significant. Because as we spoke of earlier, we as the limited jiva, even if wearing a Swami title, are not the source of these Shiva, guru, speaking now in the transcendental aspect, is both the cause and the perceived effect completely. Now, the fact that a siddhi takes place through the apparent individuated unit of consciousness is not a bad thing if it simply just happens. It is not preceded by any kind of attached or selfish thought. If it just happens, all well and good. There's some purpose for it. Need not question it or be concerned about it. When it happens, just happens, that's fine. You can't get in any trouble. You're not doing anything wrong. Okay? This is a really subtle point in our sadhana and our interactions with the world that must be very, very well understood. Now, prior to reaching the point where the siddhis begin to play, it doesn't really matter. If one is prior to that point, and has not yet had the experience of siddhi activities, well, then if you are, excited, interested, stymied, in awe of such things, well, that's okay. That's not a problem. Because you are not yet at the level where this can actually occur and where you can, if moving in the wrong direction, you can get these things to happen. But you don't want to do that because any of these powers is still a limiting factor. Because within your own individuated consciousness, you must see yourself as the doer. And that's not the correct way. And it will almost always lead to problems of one sort or another. It's really not worth it. And again, this is where the living embodied guru will get you squared away about such things, because they will most certainly know what's going on. So whether their interaction with the practitioner is inward or outward, they will be corrected. And that's just part of the guru's job. That is what the living guru is responsible for. And that is one of the great duties of the living guru, is to assist us to get through this stage without getting into big trouble. Now, next week, we will continue with Swami Anantananda Giri's commentary, where he discusses the five obscuring coverings, or the five elements and their outer manifestations and inner experiences. We will get into that next week here on Meditative Living. Sri Gyanaji, may you enjoy your holy bath in the river divine. Everyone else, embodied or not, this Swami says, namaste and blessings, with great love and great respect from the heart of all. Om Namo Narayana. We'll see you next week right here on meditativeliving on type1radio.com.